outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
Wayne, I made an epic husband blunder today.
Oh no. I'm sorry. Was it painful?
It was. It was. Gosh. And my wife hasn't let me forget it yet.
Is it still painful? It must be. Oh my gosh. What blunder did you commit here?
My wife got a haircut and a new hairstyle, and she asked for my opinion. And I gave my honest opinion.
Oh.
And I guess that I literally was told by my wife, and this is the best thing that I heard this week. You know, Kyle, sometimes in these moments, it's okay to lie.
Oh, gosh. I won't ask you to put your assessment out over the airwaves.
I will not. Yeah. I'm not going to put it out there.
Oh, this is where I really miss my daughter, Julie, because Sarah would go for a hair appointment, and I'm not a person that notices that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. Like, I can have a friend that, you know, shave his beard off, and we're sitting there talking. He goes, you notice anything different? And I'm going, like, we just started last week, and I'm going, what are we doing here? And I go, you had a beard? And I'm like, I just don't notice some of that stuff. And I loved it when I get home, and Julia would walk right past me, mom's hair done today. Thank you, sweetheart. Honey, you look lovely today. Wow, what'd you do to your hair? It looks great. The script is there. You don't need to actually pause a moment and have a thought and actually express it.
I definitely walked into that reminder today of nope, this was not one of the times that I should have been learning to use my voice and being honest about my opinion.
Well, you're young. You've still got time to learn, I guess.
I guess. I hope so.
Gee, me too. Me too. That's the same thing if she ever asks you, do these pants make me look fat?
It unfortunately fell into a category along those lines.
The answer is always no. These look great.
Nope. They look phenomenal. No, I ran straight into that one, unfortunately, and it was not good.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah.
She take it good naturedly or did it sting?
I walked up to her with her coworkers later on in the day, and they were getting coffee at the local coffee shop here on campus. And she made the comment of, so you are still in the doghouse, but we had lunch together. So I think we're okay.
Nice to know.
We're okay, but yeah.
Nice to know though. It's because sometimes they don't let you know and you're not sure if you're in the doghouse or not still.
Oh no, it's
lovely. Both
good naturedly and a little bit of a, just so you're aware. It was definitely a, just so you know, that was a really dumb comment that you made today.
Oh my gosh.
Even trained marriage and family therapists walk into absolutely ridiculous situations like that.
Well, yeah, honesty. I think honesty is great. There's places where honesty is not actually being asked for.
Correct.
I'm fishing for a compliment here. You didn't know that?
I got a very stark reminder of that today.
Which is kind of a dilemma, right? Because if somebody did something that wasn't flattering and asked you what you thought, and I'm not saying hers wasn't flattering since we don't know specifics. I'm just saying, my thing would be, like, I asked Sarah, does this haircut look okay? I really want the truth. I really Correct. Don't need somebody to tell me, yeah, it looks awesome, and everybody's laughing behind my back. I would rather, yes. But it doesn't always work that way.
Well, especially like for me anyway, it's like, well, I can just go next time. I won't go back to that barber. That's fine. You know, like not a big deal. But a woman's hair is a big deal. And making sure that I am kind, not that I wasn't kind, but just, yeah, the truth and my actual feedback was not desired in that moment.
Well, it's nice to learn lessons every day of your life.
Oh my gosh, every day learning something new or being reminded of something old.
Yes. Well, that's the way it works sometimes. Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And this is The God Journey. And welcome to join us here. And what's the best? You said the best thing you heard this week was what?
Was
the truth not always needed?
Yes, it was just coming. You know, Kyle, in this situation, I think I would have preferred you to lie.
I'm not sure that would be the best thing I heard in a week's time, but you have standards, I guess.
It was, yeah, it was an interesting, especially because it came in the context of Sunday night, Jess and I do a check-in together. So we get a babysitter and we go and we just talk logistics uninterrupted, whether it be bills or checking in on each other's heart or whatever it might be.
Right.
And we got into a pretty deep conversation and a lot about like giving feedback and hearing each other's heart and not missing each other and her wanting me to be honest and self-expressive. And I really, and so, so then the next day being this morning, I
actually followed through on the advice.
Yeah, correct. And made and blundered straight into a landmine.
Oh boy.
Oh man. What about you? What was the best thing that you heard this week?
That's a good reminder. This is from the Japanese theologian Kasuki Koyama, which okay. I don't know who he is. I've never read him, but I read him in another book where he was quoted. And the book was AI and All Its Splendor by Jeffrey Bilbro. He quotes this Kasuki Koyama, and I'm probably butchering the name. God walks slowly because he is love. If he is not love, he would have gone much faster.
Ooh.
Isn't that good?
That is good. I like that.
And then the author added at the end of that, Jesus didn't jet around the world. He walked around Judea. I love that. Because we talk about getting on God's pace. It's been one of the themes of my heart in the last 4 or 5 years of God never moves as quickly as I would love him to. But I'm learning to slow and be at his pace, learning to follow him, which means you can't walk faster than the person you're following. It just does not work. And it was just a great reminder because people wonder, you know, why is so long between the law and Jesus is coming? And why so long till the second coming? And and people think about things in their own life. And I think that's what all that waiting on God is about. It's not waiting on God because God has dates established that we haven't gotten to yet. It's He's moving at a pace that love demands, and love doesn't move quickly. Love moves very slowly, and we could learn that in a lot of things in my life, and I'm learning that. I love the reminder that he walks slowly because he's love, and if he's not love, he could have worked so much faster, and then you're kind of grateful that he works slower.
That's very true, especially when you think about some of the other ways that people try to work in order to be able to generate change or to create an impact in the world. Yeah, there are other ways that can create an influence or a shift in behavior that are faster, but the takeaway usually is not nearly as good.
Yeah, and that's true in our marriage relationships. It's true in our friendships. If you're moving fast in a relationship, you're probably leaving somebody in your dust. You're probably, you know, just, you got an agenda and the agenda needs speed, and love doesn't have an agenda and love doesn't need speed. It's willing to take the time that it takes to let things deepen and transform and help and all that.
Well, and then eventually, if you are operating at that type of pace, then usually you could even wind up talking about, say, a bus with a bunch of dead bodies behind it at a church service, and that'd be totally acceptable.
Now, be careful. You're going to step on a few toes. And I visited one this week, so.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, a friend of mine's a pastor, and every once in a while, I'd like to hear him speak and just go sit through a service. And
yeah.
I did notice how much righteousness is used in readings, in songs, and every time I'm changing it to justice, I'm going, this is so much more fun, because righteousness is always one of those things where, okay, if I have to, I will, I'll learn to. And justice is one of those joyful things of what's really best and right and wholesome. And justice is just so much a better word. So
it's interesting that you say that, because I went to a Sunday morning gathering with Jess. Our family went this week as well. And I was doing the exact same thing. He was teaching through. There was a lot of righteousness, and I just wrote down in my journal, justice, justice, justice. And it was a lot of fun. It landed, even in the context that he was talking about, it just landed better. It was like, and there was like this pause in my head, and I was like, I wonder if how he would take it if I stood up in the middle and said, What if we mistranslated righteousness for justice? Or mistranslated justice for righteousness, excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you do that?
No.
Oh, yeah. You didn't do that. I thought, gosh, yeah. What? You did what? This honesty thing's really getting to you, Kyle.
No, I'm not quite there yet.
Yeah, stand in the middle of service. Just thinking for a moment. I had a conversation with Toby this morning, and he was talking about a conversation he had with people last week. That when you really think of it as justice and you begin to translate the conversations that way, then it's much more clear, or it's clearer, better said, that salvation is not an I experience, it's a we experience. You can't do justice alone. And so the whole idea of salvation is, which is what I liked about the term when I first heard it from Toby, was it really does make our salvation and the fruit of our salvation a very relational journey. It's how I treat others. It's inside the family of God. If I'm experiencing the life of God, then I've got brothers and sisters experience the life of God as well. And so I get to enjoy that together. And that could have been probably the best thing I heard this week if I'd have thought about it when we were doing the best things we heard this week.
I think that may have actually fallen in that category for me as well. That is a very interesting idea to sort through. The salvation is not an I experience, but a we experience.
Yeah.
That radically changes most messages that I hear in regards to salvation from a traditional pulpit.
Yeah. It really does, because it's not just me and focused on me and my getting my get out of hell free card or my imputed righteousness from Jesus. It really is. I've been invited into a family. And the family's got different gifts and different things and abilities, and it's not a competition. It's a collaboration of like-minded hearts, and there's lots of different gifts that we have that we don't have to compare each other, like who's got this and who's got that, and I feel left out, I want a better gift. And the whole idea of justice inside relationships is a powerful, powerful concept. Anyway, we ended last week with a little shout-out reference to 2 Corinthians 12 about power being perfected in weakness, and you said, let's revisit that next week. So,
yes.
What about that would you like to revisit?
Oh, geez. It was interesting. I was doing a consultation with a company that I've been working with, and it was a great day, had a great dialogue with the team, and there was varying levels of leadership that were involved in it. And yet in the midst of it, there was this really weird feeling that I got, especially near the end of the training. And I was just kind of like holding it before God. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, what, why am I feeling off? Like, why am I feeling like this is just not landing in the place that I wanted to land? And the dialogue was around strengths and how do we, moving from identifying those things that God has placed in us, that no matter what we're doing, they're those underlying streams that bring us a sense of fulfillment and life and purpose and meaning. And so this assessment does a really good job at helping people start to put language around that and understand more of who God created them to be in that way. The challenge is that when you starting to move from the initial identification to owning it, because a lot of the time it requires a substantial amount of vulnerability and it requires being open and honest, especially when you're looking at reshaping business culture and or when you're looking at reshaping any kind of culture at all, it partially requires an acknowledgement of the weaknesses that are currently existing. And man, if there isn't that space, that rest, to be that sense of self-worth or self-understanding that I am loved, starting out foundationally, I am loved. If you're not starting there, and yet you're looking to shift culture towards a more wholehearted or love-based culture, it's really hard to do, because opening up and being vulnerable and being honest about where you're at and some of your shortcomings or some of the areas that are needing more growth, that's weakness. And it's it's hard to be open about those. I was watching the tension of that, not just in this group, but in other groups that I've worked with, really watching that, that tension of, well, if we actually go into this, it's going to be tough. If we actually, if I actually embrace the areas that I'm weak, if I actually embrace the areas that I'm not doing well right now, what's going to happen on the other side? Will I lose my power? Will I lose my influence? Will I lose my position in the company, the church, the corporation, whatever it might be? What do I do? And so the idea of power being perfected through weakness, it's so countercultural to the way our minds go, the way our minds work, often where society leads us to or pushes us towards. What are your thoughts on that?
Particularly in an employment capacity, because the whole idea is I want to bring strengths and value to the institution I'm involved with, and yes, that's going to center on my strengths, and that's going to attempt to minimize any kind of weakness in my life. And that's such a like you said, counterintuitive. It's a way to think that when this has been kind of jarring to me, because I've been drawn to this passage with the cancer diagnosis that I'm dealing with and treatment. Yeah. And Paul's saying, and he actually says it before he gets to this thing about the thorn in his flesh. He actually says it in the chapter before. If I'm going to boast in anything, I'm going to boast in my weakness. And you go, you're going to what? What? Why would you say that? I said, I will boast in the things that show my weakness. And then in 1 Corinthians or 2 Corinthians 12, when he talks about this thorn in the flesh that's been given to him, which is an interesting way to say it. It was given. Here's a neat little gift, thorn in the flesh. And he doesn't tell us what it is. We don't know if it's a literal messenger from Satan, if it's somebody that's harassing him, if it's some need or psychological disturbance in the force, whatever. There's something going on that really buffets, harasses. In fact, Paul uses the word torment. That's a pretty strong word. And he said, I've three times entreated Jesus to take it away. And Jesus said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And part of it, he says, the reason I got that, he had this incredible vision up into the seventh heaven kind of stuff, and it was given him to keep him from becoming conceited, which is, I've been tracing that language as I'm kind of processing this. The formula Paul uses three or four times when he writes is selfish ambition and vain conceit, as defining those things that draw us away from kingdom thinking. So the selfish ambition, I want what I want for me, vain conceit, thinking of myself better than I am, those things lead us away. And the sense of justice would lead us to having an accurate assessment of ourselves, which would be our weaknesses as well as our strengths. So then he says, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, he says, he goes back to this. This is from the chapter before. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses. And when this scripture first came up in my thinking and praying and kind of negotiating this cancer stuff with God, this scripture comes up and people have sent it to me. So it wasn't just me. It was, I want you to learn what this means. And I don't think I know that yet. So you want to talk about this week? I'm going, I don't know that I know the answer to that. Because he said, I will more gladly boast about my weaknesses. Now that's not, this is a discipline I'm doing for God, and it's awkward, and it's whatever. I will gladly do this. And then he says, that is why for Christ's sake, or he says, no, excuse me. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. And you can read all that and go, yeah, that's really good stuff. But for me, I go, whatever he was saying up there at the beginning about my grace is perfected in weakness, or my power is, my grace is sufficient for you, I'm going, I don't know that, because I don't gladly embrace my weaknesses, and I don't delight in weaknesses, in insults, in persecutions. I go, there's something to understand about God here that I'm still trying to understand. I'd love to know what that is, that when I get it, when it becomes real for me, then I'll gladly boast in my weaknesses. Because right now, I'm aware of my weaknesses, and I don't mind discussing them with people. Or things that make me weak, the cancer, the back surgery, the things that made my life a little less easier to negotiate because I've got these things now I've got to deal with in my life. Yeah. And yet Paul says, I'm going to delight in those things, in weaknesses. This fits that. In insults. I get my fair share of those. I'm not saying I delight in them yet. Sometimes I do. Sometimes when it comes from the right person and they're mocking the thing I know God has made real in me, like somebody wants to mock the loving God from the shack, go ahead. Go ahead, make my day. I will gladly rejoice in that. But when the insults go personal, in hardships, This is that for me is added new hardships in my life and in persecutions, in difficulties. These are all the things if we really understood the nature of God's power, then we'd delight in these things.
I've had very mixed feelings about this verse because often this is the verse that is given in the midst of consolation. Right. So there you're consoling somebody, especially in some of the previous, more conservative, traditional evangelical circles that I was a part of. If somebody was hurting or going through a really hard time, they would often point to this verse. And sometimes it was well-meaning and it landed okay. And other times it's like, really? Like, that's what you're going to say? That is the wisdom you're going to send my direction is that I'm going to glorify in my weakness and that his power is made known in my weakness. Like, really? That's where you're going to go with that? And man, I've heard this message in very mixed context in regards to how it's used for people in their life.
And it never made sense. I'd go away going, I don't know what that means. But now I'm trying to get a glimpse through that door going, I do want to know what this means because there's a gladness. And part of this, okay, I'll look for what's the fruit of this that's happening around me. And there's a lot. There's a lot of personal transformation that's come in the weakness of this and God not fixing it the way I hoped he would when I first found out I was going down this road. And if any of you missed the blog last week, for the podcast, when Jenny, my friend from England, posted a lengthy response to what we said about being embarrassed about cancer and being embarrassed and wanting people to know I'm not that kind of person that gets that kind of disease. And the fallacy of that way of thinking, Jenny's got a long blog comment, and I'd encourage you to go back and read it. But in this sense of, okay, I'm going to rejoice, I'm going to be glad. And it's not like I'm going to fake a gladness about it. There's something... Yes. When you get it, and I agree with you, it's not the best advice to give people who are hurting. Guess what? Jesus is really blessing you by giving you something to make his grace sufficient for you. But I have been looking. I see the things in my life that have changed. It's actually put me in touch with a brother that I got separated from 30 years ago. Hmm. And it so happens he has the same disease I had. And when he heard through the grapevine that I had this disease, he contacted me because he's been at it for 6 years. I've been at it for 4 months. And he just said, hey, if you need any insight, anything about this. And so he passed on some stuff. This is a brother who was one of the elders at that institution I was at 30 years ago that didn't allow me to continue to be part of it and actually told some very significant untruths about myself. And that put me in a real state of weakness to which, I mean, God has gone on. If that hadn't happened, I don't know how I would be living where I live today. That opened doors to a different view of the atonement. That opened doors to seeing God's love. That opened doors. God really showed himself strong in the midst of that weakness. But one fruit of my having this disease, we got sharing some things about the disease, just emails and whatever. And I kind of just felt like, you know, we've got some unfinished business, you and me. And I asked him, I said, do you ever want to go back and talk about that? Because I think I would. I think I would love to find what reconciliation looks like coming out of that thing. And so this last week, we had an hour and a half phone conversation that was just beautiful in the sense of humility and weakness and mistakes that were made and being able to own it rather than ignore it, rather than brush it under the rug, rather than having to pretend to be stronger than we are. And already that to me, that fruit is worth going down this road. I'll say that. It's worth it by far. If that's what he means, but I'll gladly boast in my hardship, in my weakness, in my, and again, it's not pretend to be glad.
Yeah.
It's not fake. It's not a discipline here. There's a reality that when you embrace it, you will.
And that's, I think about the times where I've navigated some really, really challenging life stuff. And I have seen his grace be sufficient. I have seen his love come through and his grace come through in ways that I couldn't even begin to imagine. I'm thinking back to several different life experiences, whether it be the stuff that we navigated with Eliana, my broken engagement back in my early 20s. I mean, there's multiple different things that came up as I was thinking about that. And in those times, I saw God pursue my heart in ways that I didn't even know he did anymore. I had read about them, I'd heard about them, but I didn't even know that he was that active, that tangible, that dynamic still in the world today. And to see him step in and start building that relationship of trust between he and I, as I've navigated some of those things, there has been a, I wouldn't necessarily say a gladness yet.
Yeah.
But there's definitely a level of trust and resiliency that has increased. Like, there isn't that whiplash of my late teens, early 20s of God has abandoned me. He doesn't love me. He doesn't care. Like, what, he would change this for me. There isn't that whiplash anymore. There's that, okay, Lord, like, where, what's going on here? Where are you at in this? What, I don't know, Lord. Like, I feel like I am not doing well and that I'm failing in this, or that I'm about to fall on my face. And yet you have proven yourself time and time again to be sufficient, to be what I need, to be the sustainer through those hard times and through the droughts and through the dark days. And so that element, I think I've tasted a little bit, but the definitely not at gladness. And the whole idea of power, even the fact of like his power resting on me in weakness, I think I've tasted a snippet of that, but in regards to that being a consistent element of our relationship, I wouldn't say I'm there yet.
No, I'm not saying I'm there yet, but I really want to learn what this means. I really think there's something about letting my weakness be a place where God can display his power rather than trying to hide my weakness or trying to fill it in around me with other people or whatever, to let weakness be a part of my journey. Even more, I mean, Paul seems to get to the end of his life here or toward the end of it, and he's really more boastful about his weaknesses than he is at all about his strengths.
Okay, so have you experienced, though, the false modesty thing? Like, I bumped into this a little while ago. I haven't really encountered it recently, but earlier in my days of walking with Christ, I bumped into it a lot of this idea of, I'm just a piece of dirt, or, you know, these are my weaknesses. And then all of a sudden became like this glorified trauma dump of junk that is in people's lives out of this weird, like, kind of yuck meter pegging, I'm going to boast in my weaknesses so that God's power is known in the world. And yet there was kind of a yuck flavor to me anyway, that came in the midst of that. Did you ever encounter any of that?
Yeah, that was because it was a self-loathing in it. You know, such a worm as I is how that got expressed in some hymns and choruses. And
yes,
the whole idea that we're just a piece of dirt and God's great mercy comes and finds it. I don't think that's what Paul's talking about here.
Yeah.
Paul is very aware of his strengths and what he's done in the world and how he's put the gospel forward. And yet he's gone through an awful lot of hardship about it. And it'd be better in our hardship to delight that God's going to display his power here in a way that he wouldn't have if we weren't going through it. So I don't think it's that warm self-loathing. I don't think that's, I agree with you. That pegs my yuck meter too, because it seems so false and unreal. Mm-hmm. And Paul's language doesn't seem that way. Paul's very much being clear about, man, I'm going to delight in these things because God's going to make himself known to me and probably through me in ways that he wouldn't had I not gone through this hardship. Now, I can say that about hardships I've been through. I can look back, whether it's the parting ways with the congregation I helped to plant years ago, whether it's some of the betrayals I've experienced by others. I've gone through hardships and see amazing fruit come out of them where you go, okay, man, I'm grateful now that I had that in my quiver because that prepared me for other things. It's another thing to be glad in the moment. Because I've got a good 2-year lag on God stuff. We can look back, go, oh yeah, but I'm getting closer now because I only had this for 4 months, and I'm already seeing, okay, in my weakness here, God gets to be made stronger. It's more focused on Him than it is on me, and I think that's a healthier way to live by far. And when we don't feign weakness, but when we're actually honest and vulnerable about our weakness, that invites people into our lives and us into their life in ways they would never display if they didn't come across some vulnerability and people being okay with their weakness, then they get to be okay with theirs.
What about the power piece? Just out of curiosity, because I feel like this is another one of the pieces of this conversation that, at least for me, I really go back and forth on, because it's like, okay, am I praying, like when I say, okay, Lord, I want your power to be seen through me in this, in my weakness. I want to see that made known. But am I dictating what that power looks like? Am I putting parameters or a box around, this is how I need your power to show up? This is how, like for me, I remember going through that broken engagement and being like, okay, I need your power to show up and change her mind. Well, that didn't happen. And
bring me a better woman.
It didn't happen. And I'm very glad that it didn't, because of some of the things that came about later on. But that whole piece of like, okay, this is how I expected or thought his power would be revealed through my weakness. And it came in a very different way. Now, that definitely changed my perspective of the way his love moves in the midst of some of those times, that he's not a holy lottery machine that I'm throwing a coin in and pulling the handle. But I don't know. What do you think on that?
Yeah, I think the power is without expectation from us. I think once we go there, I don't know about you, it just doesn't work. And that's the best thing about that, is you can have your expectations about how God will repair this, and he doesn't. And if that sends you into a spiral of, oh, God doesn't love me, or maybe he's not real. And I've been in those spirals, and I think God just looks at us going, oh, please don't go into that pit again, because it's going to take me months to get you back out and trust my love again. And then if we hit the next hardship and you spiral down into how unloved you are, then I'm going to have to spend more months. And I think God has done that in my younger days an awful lot, finding me in my pit of self, and not self-loathing, in my pit of self-despair. God, where in the blazes are you? So I think it comes without expectation, other than the fact that his power will be demonstrated here somehow. And instead of trying to get the how, I'm looking for that how. It's kind of part of the adventure. I ran across this a couple of weeks ago, and I think it fits here. It's called The Valley of Vision, and it's from a Puritan prayer book. Now, if you've heard the podcast much, I don't hold much affection for what the Puritans were and did, and some of their leadership and control issues, horrendous. But listen to this. This is from their prayer book. It says, Lord high and holy, meek and lowly, thou hast brought me to the valley of vision, where I live in the depths, but see you in the heights. Hemmed in by mountains of sin, I behold your glory. Let me learn by paradox, the way down is up, that to be low is to be high, that the broken heart is the healed heart, the contrite spirit is the rejoicing spirit, the repenting soul is the victorious soul, and that to have nothing is to possess all, that to bear the cross is to wear the crown, that to give is to receive, that the valley is a place of vision. Lord, in the daytime, stars can be seen from the deepest wells. I didn't know that. I've never crawled down in a well to know you can get in a well deep enough that you can see the stars in daylight. That just sounds unbelievable to me. Let me find your light in my darkness, your life in my death, your joy in my sorrow, your grace in my sin, your riches in my poverty, your glory in my valley. Now that's a prayer.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it is. I mean, that's a prayer of somebody who went through it. Like that, that wasn't contrived. That wasn't like a, I'm just writing this because it's going to sell some books or I'm going to get a new label, a new label deal. I mean, that, yeah, that to me lands like somebody who's gone through it and seeing God faithfully show up in that way.
That's the broken heart is the healed heart. And the contrite heart is the victorious, the contrite heart is the rejoicing spirit. Man, I tell you what, I read that this time going, okay, there's stuff here. I still want to learn this from the deepest part of my soul. And if this has come along in my life so that God has an opportunity, I think of the blind man where they said, who sinned, his mother or his parents or him? And Jesus said, no, this is just a place for the glory of God to be revealed. If we saw all of our hardships that way, not that the glory of God has failed me, but yeah, here's an opportunity for God's glory to unfold. If I stay with him in the confidence of his love, and not, as I said, crawl down in the pit of personal, you know, God hates me or God's not real and go through all that. If we can stay out of that and just trust his love in the midst of whatever hardship, insult, persecution has come our way, then as that glory unfolds, maybe that's where the gladness comes from. Paul had enough experience. He's been beaten and stoned and shipwrecked, and he goes through it in the previous chapter. He goes through all the bad stuff that happened to Paul in his life. And that's when he says, yeah, I'll glory in that. My weakness makes him strong. Being shipwrecked on that island and the snake bit that guy, and then God, that guy didn't die, and there was a place for the gospel to be pulled out of that hardship that, man, you would just think it'd be better not to be shipwrecked. But if you are shipwrecked, then let's see how God's glory happens beyond my ability to fix it myself. That'd be where the weakness is. I can't fix this. I can't fix my cancer, even through prayer. I can't. It's in God's hands, and medical science is doing their deal, and the fruit of it is up to God, and how long I live is up to God. And to be in a weakened place of dependence is a healthier place than when your life's all together and you think, yeah, I've got this, I can handle this. And so then you, which I have done ton in my life, is to trust my strength instead of trusting his power.
Yeah. I love the idea of paradox too, because I think so often we try to think of it in these black and white or clear cut ways of processing it. And it's like, no, this isn't that easy. It is turning our thoughts on their head in some very unique ways, or often in ways that we couldn't have even unpacked until we're navigating the challenges that we're facing.
Yeah.
I love the imagery though of the well and looking up through. I was working with an individual one time and we were talking through some things, and I was doing some guided imagery, and there was a very deep pain that this individual was navigating, and they were looking up and they could just see the ring of like light above them from the depth of this well.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, what do you see around? And they're like, well, there's like some people that are standing around and they're kind of reaching down, but they can't really get to me, kind of a thing. And I was like, okay. And so we were processing some of the emotion that was tied to that. And I said, okay, where is Jesus in this? And the individual just loses it. And I was like, I'm just sitting there like, whoa, like what just happened here? And their comment back was, he's in the bottom of the well pushing me towards the light. And that was just such like they did not expect. They thought that Jesus would be the person up on the top of, you know, reaching down.
How'd you get down there? Come up here.
Oh, now I've got to jump down, you know, like I got to get a rope down there to you or whatever, because you fell down in the well again. No, he was in the well pushing this individual towards the light. And that, like, that imagery, I mean, that was a long time ago that imagery came up in a conversation with an individual, and still to this day, I will not forget that image, because that, like, they had that image and it was very impactful to them, but it landed hard with me too. I was like, oh, that is who Jesus is. He doesn't stand on the rim and throw you a rescue rope. He jumps down in the well and is pushing you towards the light.
Yeah, and that's what I love about this passage from 2 Corinthians is it starts with Paul's being tormented, begging God to take this away, and God just says, no, I'm not. My grace is sufficient. My grace will get you through this, and it gets you through it in a way that will deliver his power to be more important in our life than our own strengths are. And that's that's part of it. And this was partly to keep Paul from being conceited, that God cared enough that you wouldn't go down that vain conceit road that Paul warns others about, that I'm going to let this stay there. I don't know that it's saying God gave it to him, but it was given him. He ends up with this tormenting spirit of whatever manifestation that took. And God's just going to say, I'm going to let it ride. I'm going to let you see my grace perfected in your struggle. And that's where God's power really dwells in a significant way. And so we get to see it.
And it's interesting that that landed again in Paul's life near the end of his life, right? Like, because Paul, by their standards, basically had been educated at an Ivy League college. I mean, he had the best education, the best background. I mean, he, in his own words, I was the Pharisee of all Pharisees, right? Like, I had received the best education. I knew all the words. I had it dialed in. And yet all of that was for nothing, you know? And he talks about the road and the challenge that he experiences on the road. And now all of a sudden he's weak. And now all of a sudden he needs to be led into the city by his companions that is with him. So that's his first initial encounter with the love of Jesus. And then near the end of his life, he's circling back and being reminded of, like, Paul, look, your Ivy League degree, all the things that you've done for me, all those things still, like, I still love you. I love you. And it wasn't for the way that you performed. It wasn't for the things that you did. It wasn't for the things that you overcome. I love you for you, Paul.
Can you imagine being able to trust God in the middle of our weaknesses because we know that's where his grace proves sufficient? So when we start finding ourselves in the bottom of a pit or going through a difficult time or a hardship, being able to step back and go, okay, this is where God gets to show himself. And I don't know how, when, why, or where, but I'm going to be watching for that rather than complaining that, because he said, I will gladly face up to these things. I'm going, okay, this is something you still need to do in me, and I sure want you to.
Yeah.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.